Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. It is Wednesday, November 10th. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And of course, Winning Cures Everything. We like to talk football on this show. There's a lot to discuss, Chris. Good gracious. We got a new hire at Texas Tech. We'll hit on that for a second. Nebraska, Washington, the mess going on at Florida. And I'm even going to bring up a little bit about Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky here in just a minute. Before we get started, I have been forgetting to go through the rundown early in the show. So let me go ahead and start off with that. Go to winningcureseverything.com. You can find everything that you need to know about us over there, including where to subscribe to the podcast or the YouTube channel, etc. Make sure you are subscribed everywhere that you can. But also, if you subscribe to the podcast, leave a nice 5-star review over on Apple Podcast. That certainly helps us out. We've been getting a few more of those lately, and we certainly appreciate that. The show is brought to you each and every time out by BetUS, America's top sports book, their top online sports book anyway. But you can go to BetUS.com, use the promo code NCAAF 2021, you get 125% sign up bonus up to $2,500. And it's sportsbook exclusive. It's fantastic. So go ahead and check that out over at betus.com. You can also click the link that's in the description. It's going to toss the promo code in there for you. Chris hosts the SBR Picks College Football Show. You can find them over on Twitter right now. Don't know about the YouTube as of yet. Eventually, the YouTube will be back, but right now it's only on Twitter. You can follow them at SBR Sports Picks. And I host the BetUS College Football Show on Wednesdays and Thursdays. There is a link to both of those in the description below. Go ahead and click that, the description on YouTube and on the podcast. Chris, first off, how's your day, brother?
Oh, it's fine.
Everything's feeling good.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's just a work day, man.
That's, I feel you. We're all the way into November. The weeks of college football and the NFL are slowly dwindling away. But we still got a few of them to get through. So this week, of course, we're going to be talking NFL big games for Week 10, our Super Contest picks, which, by the way, went 5-0 on my Super Contest picks last week. Not too shabby. We are going to do the recap, and we're going to start off with this. Topic number one on the board, Texas Tech hired a new football coach. And it wasn't Sonny Dykes, and it wasn't Jeff Traylor, and it wasn't any of those names. They hired Joey McGuire, who is Baylor's associate head coach, has been for the last 5 years. And look, Joey was a longtime successful high school coach at Cedar Hill High School, won several state championships, et cetera. And Chris, what I have taken away from this, first off, grading coaching hires is ridiculous. Like, it doesn't work anymore. Anybody that is still doing it is just doing it for clicks. The bottom line is this: we don't know if this is going to work or not, but what we do know is they liked Jeff Traylor, and they liked what he brought to the table, a relationship with high school coaches across the state, in recruiting. And no, this isn't going to switch any four or five stars that were planning on going to Texas or Oklahoma or Alabama or Ohio State. They're not going to all of a sudden switch and head over to Texas Tech because Lubbock just ain't the place to go if you're a four or five star kid. But the truth is, those tweeners, the guys that are coming up, the rising kids that are two stars and three stars that can be developed into big-time prospects, those start looking at Texas Tech because they've got a good relationship, or at least the high school coaches do, with this guy, with Joey McGuire, and you can start getting more talent that way, much the same way that UTSA is doing right now under Jeff Traylor. I think it's a fantastic hire. It's absolutely worth a shot. If you did something before, you've always gone offense, 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 why not try something a little bit different, see what happens? What are your thoughts on it, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate this idea either. I also think having a good relationship with the coaches like that around the state doesn't just help you with recruiting initially. I think it's going to have an unbelievable effect on transfer portal recruiting because very few of these kids have a bad relationship with their high school coach. And I promise you, if you're disgruntled at your school that you're at currently and you're thinking about transferring, one of the people that you're probably going to reach out to is your high school football coach for advice. And having a relationship with those people could, I think, have a big, big play in the transfer portal, which is where Texas Tech is going to get their four-star athletes.
I tend to agree. That's a fantastic viewpoint on it. This thing helps. You know, he has not had experience at the high major level. He has had experience as an assistant at Baylor. He was the associate head coach under Matt Rhule. He was kept on staff with Dave Aranda. There's a reason for that, and they have had success at Baylor building that program up. They expect the same thing at Texas Tech, I think.
The one thing that's going to be a big deal is at some point in time he's going to have to coach.
Yes.
At some point in time, he's going to have to draw up some X's and O's, or he's going to have to hire some people to do those things. And that's going to have a big effect on this as well. We need to know the coordinators because we don't know, is this an offensive guy, is it a defensive guy? And yes, he's probably coached one side of the ball or the other quite a bit, but he's never been the play caller for that thing.
Very interesting viewpoint on this, by the way. He left Baylor staff in the middle of the season and went ahead and took the job with Texas Tech. Baylor still has to play Texas Tech. So a little bit of an interesting thing. Now, obviously, he is not, he's not going to be the head coach right now. Obviously, that coaching staff is intact except for Matt Wells. I'm excited. I'm curious to see what is going on. So I love this. I like the hire. We'll see what Texas Tech ends up being with Joey McGuire. Next topic on the board, Nebraska announced that they are going to keep Scott Frost. He is 3-7 this year. There will be no bowl. They've only got two games left in the season, but his salary is being cut from $5 million down to $4 million per year, and his buyout is being cut from $15 million down to $7.5 million. There's going to be a lot of extra money for new coordinators or new whatever that needs to be brought in if that is the way that they go. Trev Alberts, the AD at Nebraska, said that basically this is Scott betting on himself. And I think what he meant by that is we had a conversation and it's not working right now. And if you want to stay on for less risk for us, then we might could go ahead with that. But if you are not willing to make any changes, if you are not willing to do something differently, then we cannot continue this relationship. And Scott said, yes, I will take less money. I will, da 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 da. I don't know what to make of this. It doesn't seem like a smart idea for Scott Frost. However, if he really believes that he can turn this thing around and he wants to be at Nebraska, then by all means. But if I'm looking at this and I see $15 million as opposed to $7.5 million, and I'm only making $4 million next season, it does look, basically what it looks like is $5 million per year down to $4 million. So add $4 million plus $7.5 million. If he gets fired after next season, he's going to make $11.5 million as opposed to $15 million. Okay, like $3.5 million is the difference we're looking at, right? I don't know what to make of this. I don't know that this is going to work. However, in the past, we have seen, and this is the only example that I can think of, Greg Schiano started out with four losing seasons, or at least four non-winning seasons, at Rutgers, and then was able to turn Rutgers into a juggernaut in the Big East. I don't know that the Big 12 is capable, or the Big 10 allows you to be capable of the same thing. I don't know where you go with this. If he hasn't been able to do it already, what makes you think a fifth year will be a chance, will be anything different? What are your thoughts on this?
So this looks exactly like the Jim Harbaugh deal.
Yeah, 100%.
We're not happy. Jim Harbaugh totally turned his staff over, and Jim Harbaugh's staff went from being the oldest coaching staff in college football to being one of the youngest. And they got excited. They recruited a lot better, and all of a sudden, players started performing. I guess the performance on the field is about the same as it has been, you know, last year.
Definitely better than it was last season at Michigan.
But
anyway.
That's just last year. You can't look at that as the conundrum of what they were.
Right.
They won 8 or 9 games every year under Harbaugh until last year. That staff that he had last year wasn't the only year they were together. So.
True.
You know, I think it can work, but it all depends on the hires that he makes. And then the question is you made him reduce his salary. You're basically saving the school $3.5 million if you fire him next year. That's fine. The problem is if you hire a whole new staff, you're going to pay substantially more than $3.5 million to fire all of those people.
True. True. So at the end of the day, it might just end up being a wash, depending upon who they end up bringing in. Because I
wonder
imagine,
if that $3.5 million is his budget for his staff.
That's what I was thinking.
We're not going to allow you to go out and get more than this.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I just don't know that this is going to work. I mean, who am I to judge whether or not a guy should be able to keep his job? I mean, they have played, all of their losses have been single-digit losses, and all except for Ohio State were one-possession games. So you change one thing here and there, that's one thing. The issue is, as close as you can get to Ohio State and Michigan, etc., you are also losing to Illinois and Minnesota and Purdue. Like, you should be winning these ball games. I wonder if it's going to look any different with somebody other than Adrian Martinez under center, but who knows?
Well, it's definitely going to look different. We just don't know how different.
Yeah, I don't know if Adrian Martinez is like the guy that is actually keeping them in the games or if he is the guy that is losing the games for them. You can't blame it just on one player, but you know, there's just mistakes that have been made across the board there that lead you to question the decision-making of the coaching staff. So,
well, look, now hang on. We know the quarterback position is that important,
it is,
in college football, and we understand that Adrian, we have enough tape to know that Adrian Martinez is not the guy that's going to lead you to the promised land. Part of your job as a coach over the last 3 years is to, A, evaluate him early, develop him. The development hasn't happened, and if you can't develop him, you got to replace him. That hasn't happened.
Agreed. Agreed. And who knows what you're going to do next year, because the guys that you recruited all have transferred out. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, if you bring in some flashy, you know, 4 or 5-star kid that's going to take the job by the reins in the offseason, then okay. But that's asking a lot, I think. I mean, it's a huge gamble, but we shall see. Speaking of gambles, let's move on down to Gainesville, Florida. And, whew, Dan Mullen. Fired defensive coordinator Todd Grantham. Fired offensive line coach John Hevesy. Hevesy coached with Mullen since 2001. He's been with him basically everywhere. Like, he has always been with Mullen. And then, of course, there was the news of Anthony Richardson injuring himself dancing at the team hotel the Friday night before the game. He was cleared on Thursday to play in the game and then hurt himself on Friday night. I thought he was still injured as far as the concussion protocol from the Georgia game. But instead, it was actually he hurt his knee while he was dancing the night before, and I don't think that they are going to fire. We talked about this a little bit on the reaction show on Sunday. I don't think they're going to fire Mullen at the end of this season. I think he sacrificed his longtime assistant, the offensive line coach, and he sacrificed Grantham. But if this team does not play well the last three games of the season, they've got Samford, they've got Missouri, and they've got Florida State. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that they end up firing Mullen as well at the end of this season to go ahead and get a head start. His buyout doesn't change from one year to the next. It is $12 million regardless of when you fire him. They are not going to wait until next year or whenever to get this done. So I do wonder if the next three games, basically Mullen is coaching for his job and maybe firing some staff members wakes up the football team. But I don't know that. You got a thought on this one?
No, I mean, they asked him to do something really hard. There's no way you can ask him to fire these people and then fire him later. I think that was agreed upon before doing this.
That's entirely possible. I just don't know if you can allow the program. This is a tough one. I'm glad that I'm not making the decisions that Scott Strickland is having to make, because you know that Dan Mullen can coach, but you also know that the recruiting is not being done there that the way that it should be anyway. And what exactly should the expectation level be at Florida? I think it should be significantly more than what it has been, but I don't know. I think this is maybe you're right about this. Like, maybe that was the agreed upon deal. We're going to give you one more year if you get rid of, you know, certain guys. And I just find it hard to believe that the AD would be the one to tell him, hey, you got to fire your offensive line coach, right? Like, did he just tell him, hey, you got to make some changes? If you make changes, we'll keep you around, do you think?
I think you got to make real changes. And I think the conversation was, is if I let this guy go and this guy go, is that enough? And I think the AD probably said yes. That's how I don't think the AD said this guy goes and that guy goes. I think Dan offered up his solution, and they either say this works or this doesn't.
Yeah, I could.
I do not think you allow him to do those things in the middle of the season if you're going to fire him anyway, because it costs you the school the exact same amount of money. And now I will tell you this: we talk about things these schools do that turn other coaches off in the future. This would be something that would be a huge turnoff. If you made me fire my offensive line coach in the middle of the season that I was close personal friends with, and forget that, because it's business and you can't take the friendship into it, but you've worked together for so long. If you asked me to do that and I did it and you still fired me at the end of the year, then I think that's something that would be a real hard pill for the next coach to swallow.
Yeah, that is a valid point. There's still been a ton of talk about him possibly going to the NFL, and how there are some owners that view him more as an NFL coach.
But that would be his choice.
Yeah, that'd absolutely be his choice.
That's not the situation we're talking about.
No. I'm just bringing up a completely different situation here. If he were to leave and go to the NFL, then Florida doesn't have to worry about any of this. And maybe it makes everything easier on everybody, including himself. But this is going to be a strange thing to follow for the next, you know, however many weeks, because it does kind of feel like Scott Strickland's job is tied to Mullen. Like, if the AD, if he doesn't figure out a way to get this fixed, he could be out with Mullen after next season. So we'll see what happens.
Isn't that every athletic director in the country, though?
Not everyone. I mean, obviously at Texas Tech, like, Kirby Hocutt has gotten to, my God, what is it? He has hired 10 football and basketball coaches.
Hang on now. Whoa. That's rare. That is a small school in the middle of nowhere, Texas.
Right.
That they don't care about football, but that is not Florida SEC, Gary. That's not a team that has won national championships, okay? Like, every major school that puts massive amounts of resources into football, those athletic directors get too high. Like, somebody once, I know this because I hear LSU guys talk, Woodward was hired to make this hire. He took this job to make this higher, okay? Yes, every athletic director takes a job to bring their own guy in. They rarely get to bring two in.
True. There are certain cases where, yes.
So I don't think that Strickland, like, that's unique to Florida. That's not a unique thing to Strickland. Every athletic director is usually tied to their head coaching job for football.
True.
And if your hire doesn't work, We hire somebody else to do your job. That guy fires the head coach, and then he brings his own guy in. This is how every athletic program, for the most part, works.
Especially nowadays. It didn't used to be in, like, the early 2000s and whatnot. But nowadays, because of the amount of money, it is definitely that. Speaking of coaches that might be on their way out, let's talk about Washington. Washington has suspended Jimmy Lake for the Arizona State game. He came out and issued an apology for, quote-unquote, striking a player. We talked about the absurdity of this on the show on Sunday, on the reaction show. But this is comical, to say the least. They did go ahead and fire the offensive coordinator, John Donovan, which I've been talking about since early in the season, because of just how predictable this offense was, not only during the COVID-shortened season, but early in this season. The offense could do nothing. I mean, they were just terrible. But we already knew what John Donovan was. It was a terrible, terrible hire because he was not good at Penn State. As soon as they fired John Donovan at Penn State, that's when James Franklin won his Big Ten title. Like, he had John Donovan before, and then he brought in Joe Moorhead and changed the whole trajectory of the program. I'm curious your thoughts here, because the statement that came out from Washington about the suspension really read like it was written by lawyers, is what it looked like. And it looked like it was, hey, we are trying our hardest to figure out a way to get this guy out of here because the job may be too big for him. He may be great, and he was great as a defensive coordinator and really as a recruiter. But as you have said on this show many, many times, it's the Peter principle, right? You can be elevated and promoted to a level of failure. And that may be what's going on with Jimmy Lake. He just may not be able to handle how big the job is. I want to know what you think about the suspension and really about his job status overall.
So I think the suspension is bullshit. You know that.
Yes.
Strike, quote unquote, using the word striking a kid infuriates me. He popped the kid on it. Are we going to fire or suspend every coach that does that to a child when they celebrate a touchdown? How many people strike kids on the head while they're wearing their helmet during a game? How many times does that happen? Oh, because he was getting yelled at when he did it. Oh, that's now it's a suspendable offense? It's an offense that we suspend the guy? Are you kidding me? What world are we living in, Gary?
We are living in a world where this coach is losing football games and Washington has no idea what to do with it.
If you want to fire him because he's bad at his job, which he is bad at his job, and I think he has earned the right to be fired, and it has nothing to do with him, quote unquote, striking a child. A, that child he struck was like 6'8", 380, all right? It could beat the hell out of Jimmy Lake if at any point in time he felt his life was in danger.
Yes. Yes. I think everybody that pays attention to football, that ever played football, would understand that this was a coaching method. And
we've collectively lost our minds.
Yes.
But I think his job is in jeopardy because I think he's really bad at coaching. I think he's really, really bad at leading an organization. I don't know how good he is at the X's and O's on the defensive side of the ball, but I know one thing's for damn sure. This guy is not a leader of men.
No, he is not. It's insane to think about because he was basically hand-chosen. He was the next guy behind Chris Peterson. He was handed the job much the same way that Lincoln Riley was handed the job, much the same way that Ryan Day was handed the job at Ohio State. But this one did not turn out. It did not turn out at all. You remember in the offseason, he would wear hats that said, run the damn ball. Like, he just does not understand modern football. And it was very prevalent. You could tell it. You could absolutely tell it.
Hang on. There's no X's and O's or scheming involved that causes you to get kind of your ass beat by Montana. All right? He did not know how to prepare a football team. He did not know how to run practices in 2 days. That is the first game of the season where you've got a month to prepare for your opponent. All right?
And it's not that Montana's bad. They've actually been very good this year. However, that is an FCS school.
They're not close to being able to hang with that team.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, if you were Washington, you should have beaten that team by 3 touchdowns. It should never have been in doubt. And instead, of course, they take an L, and they are on the losing side much more than they are the winning side this season. And it just doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. So, with that said, you know,
But I think the suspension's bullshit. I'd like to be on record with that. I'll defend the guy for that. And I will tell you, I don't know that there's anything you could have done to get me to apologize for that.
I think
he's a better man than me for that.
Exactly. I don't know that if I was Jimmy Lake, I don't know that I would have apologized.
I might have had a conversation with the kid. I would have. I would have let him know, hey, man. But I would do the same thing if I didn't put my hands on him. But if somebody made a mistake on the field and I publicly, on the sidelines, jumped their ass, chewed their butt out, at some point in time when that game is over with, I'm going to approach that kid. I'm going to approach that person and say, hey, man, things got heated. You screwed up. I lost my cool a little bit. I'm just trying to make you better. I love you. I want us to be better, and I need to know that we're good. Because that's how you have a relationship. I do the same thing with my children. I get in that butt when they screw up. And then I go to them and I let them know, you know I love you, right? And I need you to make sure that we don't make these mistakes. And that's when the teaching happens, all right? It's after the yelling and the taking of the iPad and the whatever you do to discipline, however you discipline, right? There's a follow-up behind the discipline. That's the only person that needed a conversation. That's it. That's the list. Nobody else. If the athletic director walked in, I would bring that kid in and I would say, hey, we good? Yeah. Hey, Frank, get the hell out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's Gary, the easy way to go about
it. Down the road right now. I have just watched the people in front of me throw 7 different pieces of paper out the window as we're driving.
What?
Who in the hell litters still today? Who is littering right now?
It's not
7 at one time. It's not like a handful of stuff. It is driving, 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 throw something out. Driving, driving, throw something out. Driving, driving, throw something out. What is wrong with these people? They just turned around. So I was about to take my phone, take a picture of that license plate, and then figure out how I was going to absolve this situation.
I'm curious. Was it coming out of the driver's side? Like, out of the driver's window?
Yes. No, the driver looks to be the only person in the car.
How interesting. I would have said, you know, maybe children, but...
No, this is a grown-ass woman.
Oh, my God.
This is a lady. I'm sure. I'm assuming her gender. She looked in the female perspective, okay? Listen, if this was back in the day where I had the old piece of shit pickup truck, I might have gotten loose, got up under her, and got her into a wall here. not enough to hurt anybody, but like, hey, we're both calling our insurance companies. And when the police show up, I'm going to show them why I did it. And then I'll just take my ticket and let my insurance company take care of it.
There you go. There you go. I haven't seen that in quite some time.
I haven't seen anybody do that. This is blatant, too. Just brazen. Just throwing shit out the window.
Oh, my God.
What was wrong with people? Sorry.
I have no idea. I'm so glad that you were driving to give us that update, though.
Oh my God! Whew,
I do. I want to swap topics for us right quick.
Go ahead. Fire away.
So we've talked a little bit about the Sun Belt expansion and the AAC expansion, and we hit on MAC expansion, etc. And we talked about the. It seemed like it was inevitable that the MAC was going to bring in Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee State, and now it appears that Middle Tennessee State may actually hold off on joining the MAC. And the reason for this is they are looking at a pretty decent-sized payday from the buyouts from all of the teams that are leaving Conference USA to join these other conferences. There is no stability anymore with Conference USA at this point. And the Conference USA TV deal is pretty terrible. But the buyout money could be relatively sizable for a school of that size, right?
Yeah.
Western Kentucky, it has been reported that the MAC is not going to take Western Kentucky by themselves. Western Kentucky is part of a package deal. They will bring in both of them, but they won't bring in just one. So MTSU is holding up Western Kentucky from being able to join the MAC because they might be able to get a pretty sizable buyout, and then maybe they will go to the MAC later on. If you're the MAC, what do you think about this? And then if you are Middle Tennessee, what are your thoughts on this? Because there are people in leadership positions that think that they should grab the buyout and then try and go to the MAC afterwards. I'm not so certain that I wouldn't jump at the steady conference immediately, because I know that I know it's a possibility right now. I don't know that this doesn't piss off the MAC. So I'm curious your thoughts on both sides of it.
This is where people are really bad at business relationships, Gary. This is where you just be honest. You pick up the phone, you call Western Kentucky, you call the conference commissioner of the MAC, and you say, guys, Western Kentucky and I are about to be the last people standing, and all these blokes have to pay like $3 million to leave here, okay? So we're going to split 1.5 times all of these teams leaving. We haven't made that much money in 20 years combined, okay? So we're going to take this check. We're going to split it up between us two and two or three other, you know, also Rams that are getting left hanging. And then we'll come see you if you want to do that deal then. But why would I do it now and piss away all this money? For stability? Gary, there is no stability. I will tell you this. If you think the MAC is stable today, you have not paid attention to college football in the last 5 years. Okay.
You're not wrong. Nothing's
guaranteed. Stay around. Get that. This is just smart business. But you don't piss people off that are about to be your business partners. You just tell them, hey, I want to do this deal. You know.
Yeah, like, but I need to do it later.
Okay. Let's say for instance, you get a pretty sizable tax advantage once you get married, right?
Right.
If you got a wife that says, I am married to getting married the first weekend in January, you'd be like, baby, I really think December 28th is a better time to do this. Because we get the tax write-off for the whole year, even though we only been married for 2 days. Okay? Like this is just, but you just have a conversation. This is just smart business sense. You don't have to piss somebody off or rub a relationship the wrong way. And if you're the commissioner of the MAC and you don't understand what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it, then you're not a good partner that I want to partner with anyway. If you can't allow me to make an extra $5 million at a program where $5 million will carry us for two decades of our costs, then you're not a business partner that I want to be in with, because you don't understand what we are, what kind of tax bracket we are in MTSU. You're not the partnership we need.
Yeah, it does make absolutely perfect financial sense when you think about it, right? Because
I swear to God, this is why I wish I could be an athletic director. So many of these things I can fix, all these problems you can solve. And I'm not magic, by the way. Someone just has to have a boss to pick up the phone. Let's have a Zoom call between the athletic director and the president of Western Kentucky and the conference commissioner of the MAC. And in 10 minutes, I'm going to lay out all the financials of why this is a good deal. In Western Kentucky, why are you getting pissed off? You're getting the same check I'm about to get, okay? And if the MAC don't want us because we made them wait an extra 6 months, then that ain't the partnership we want, all right? If we're thinking this is going to be a lifetime partnership here, okay, then why are you upset about 6 months?
Yeah, no, you're not wrong, because the payout from those other teams is going to pay for the buyout for Middle Tennessee State and Western Kentucky.
Hang on. The Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee State might not even have to pay a buyout by then, because the damn conference can dissolve because there ain't enough members.
Well, remember, they are calling, like, Conference USA is still going to be around, but the contract might change, because remember, they're bringing Liberty.
We have to have a new contract.
Yeah, I mean, it'll have to be a new contract, because they are bringing in Liberty, Sam Houston, Jacksonville State, and I'm forgetting somebody, but
I'm certain there are clauses in the thing that basically say if so much transition takes place, then you can't, like, then it's not just an addendum to a contract or something of that nature. Like, we basically are starting a new company. Okay, if more than 30% changes then, you know, either bringing in or leaving or whatever, then at some point in time, the old contract is basically worthless. Yeah. It comes null and void, and we have to draw up new bylaws completely, and you get a say in those new bylaws. Even though you know you're leaving, you can kind of make that next buyout not so bad on you.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. So I do think it does make financial sense. And it's the constant argument, right? Security, or what you think is security, or a quick financial gain, right? Which
anybody
do you take?
Doing anything for security right now is a fool, because security is a phantom gift. It is a farce. It is a mirage. You don't have security in anything in life right now at all. You might have the most stable job in the world. Tomorrow, with a phone call, it could be gone.
You got that right. You have got that right.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, that is going to move us into our NFL Week 9 recap, and let's go ahead and discuss, you know, the four questions that I ask Chris every week about the NFL week gone by. Best games of the weekend. Now, obviously, Monday Night Football, we had the Steelers and the Bears, and it came down to a last-second kick that ended up not even getting to the goalpost, which... Pittsburgh Stadium is known for that.
That was an awful game to begin with.
That's what I was going to say. It was not a good game, so I don't know that would be one of our best games.
It was a piss-poor football game. This whole weekend, we had a lot of piss-poor.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't know what the best game of the weekend would be. I wrote down Falcons 27, Saints 25, and I wrote down Chargers 27, Eagles 24, but I don't know that those were good football games.
I enjoyed watching one game, and I thought the outcome made it okay, and the way it... I think the Vikings-Ravens game was the best game of the weekend. Those other games were close. I don't think they were enjoyable to watch. I think they were pretty awful. They just drugged on. I just didn't find – there's a lot of bad football in the NFL.
Now, you are not wrong about that.
The Giants-Raiders game wasn't bad. I know probably very few people outside of Giants fans and Raiders fans watched any of that. I did, because everything else was a snooze fest, and it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I could see that.
Wasn't close, but it was exciting.
I mean,
it's exciting sometimes to watch a team that's not good finally look competent and be good.
Yes, it was a close game. It was 23-16, and the final score was not. You know, it was not, the game was in doubt until the end. We'll say that. So it was a close game. But that is, you know, an option for this next question, which is what is the most surprising result? And I think across the board, you had surprises. Like the Titans-Rams was super surprising. The Cardinals whipping the 49ers without Kyler Murray, without DeSean Hopkins, etc. That was big. The Bills only scoring 6 points on the road at Jacksonville. That was ridiculous. You know, Broncos absolutely whipping the Cowboys, the Browns over the Bengals, like, at least the way that it happened. There were a lot of surprises this week. Did any of them stand out to you?
Well, I mean, there's only two that are in this conversation as real surprises. The rest of that stuff is just the NFL, okay? The Broncos beating the hell out of the Cowboys, the best offense in football against a team that just lost its best defensive players, and that defense shuts that offense down completely. And then the Bills, who have been on this steamboat where their offense is cooking, and they're playing a completely inept Jags team, and to lose that game outright, and like you said, to only score 6 points, pretty pathetic. Those are the only two that I would mark as surprising. The rest of it's the NFL, man.
Who lost the weekend?
God. I'm not going to say it's either the – sir?
I said, you want me to tell you mine first?
Yeah, that's fine.
So I wrote down the Bills because they were 5-2, and of course the offense had been looking really good. They had a couple of losses that are not super explainable, but are at the same time, you know, this is a team that is vying for that number one seed in the AFC. You cannot go to Jacksonville and lose, and that, because that's going to cost them the rest of the season. They're now 5-3. I don't know what to make of them. So I think, to me, it was the Bills.
I was just about to say, it's definitely not the Bills and the Cowboys, because those teams are still in first place in their division. They still control their own destiny. Neither one of them, that's fine. Like, they had a terrible game, and it's awful. I think, honestly, that so much is still in front of them that they control. The only team close to the Bills is the Patriots. And while everyone thinks, oh, the Patriots are turning a corner, but at the same time, like, are they really, and are they going to outrun the Bills the rest of the way? Like, that's a hard pill to swallow. I don't think what we saw this week with the Bills is what the Bills are. That's just whatever it is. I'm pretty set on this. The team that lost the weekend is the Packers. And the reason is because you lost your quarterback. Your backup, who you drafted with the first pick with your number one pick just 2 years ago, has an entire week of practice with the ones. He knows he's getting the start. He gets to go up against the worst defense in the NFL, and he cannot move the ball at all. He can't get anything, not yards, not. And you know what's sad? I watched a lot of this game. And I saw throws that weren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they were catchable. Devontae Adams, the best receiver in the league, or one of the best receivers in the league, who makes unbelievable catches week in and week out for Aaron Rodgers, was dropping footballs that were hitting them in the hands. Now, he had to make a move on the ball, but they were easily catchable, and I've seen him make those catches 10 times a game, okay? For Aaron Rodgers, but for Glove, he dropped every one of them. He didn't pull in a single ball that was catchable, but wasn't perfect. Not one. And I thought, this is shitty. Now, I'm not saying he did it on purpose, but I think that's shitty.
So I was going to ask about that. Do you think that there is a difference between the way that certain quarterbacks throw the football? Like, do you think Devontae Adams was just so used to the way Aaron Rodgers puts it in there as opposed to the way that Jordan Love does it? Like, obviously, right, we talk a lot about chemistry.
Answer to that is this. All right, I'm going to answer that with this. If you have to have a perfect ball from a guy like Rodgers, then we need to deeply, deeply discount you as one of the best receivers in the league. All right? All of your yard and every other GM in the country – needs to see this, because this guy's a free agent after next year, okay? And they need to see that, and they need to know, if you don't have an Aaron Rodgers throwing in the football, is your guy going to throw it just right for him, or is he going to be a dud? Are you going to pay him a ton of money, and he's going to be garbage?
And don't we see this with Patriots players all the time? Like, when they leave, they're not nearly as good in different systems,
but rarely are any of those receivers like good before they get there.
Yeah, okay? No. I'm not talking about receivers. Who was good before, like, just overall player. Like, it's. I'm not talking.
But most of those receivers, but hang on, most of those receivers were nobodies when they got there, and Tom made them into something. And yeah, they leave and they're not as good.
Right, but, right. But it's played across the board for the Patriots.
All of those are B-list guys and C-list guys.
True.
These are not tier one guys. These are not guys that are in the conversation with Hopkins and DK and the best receivers in the league. No. So we need to either grossly reevaluate Devontae Adams' ability to catch the football, and then we also need to kind of see what is their future without Jordan Love.
Yeah, without Aaron Rodgers, with
Rodgers, with Jordan Love, because it looked bad. It looked real bad. LaFleur, and that's the worst defense you're going to play all year.
LaFleur, it'll
get worse than that.
No, LaFleur came out and apologized and said that it was his fault that he didn't have Jordan Love prepared. But if you're Jordan Love, how are you not prepared? Like, you have to be ready for this time whenever it pops up. Like, at any point, Aaron Rodgers could get hit in a ball game and break his collarbone or whatever, and you are the guy. And you have to be ready at a moment's notice. Why is it that we see other backups able to come in and be at least... So, I mean, Mike White came in for the Jets and threw for 400 yards. Like, what are we talking about?
I'm telling you, I don't know. I'm just telling you, that's why they're the biggest loser of the weekend. It's because, as a team, Matt LaFleur, not nearly as good as people think he is. Okay? Jordan Love, obviously, wasn't worth that first-round pick overall. Devontae Adams, their star receiver, listen, unless you've got Aaron Rodgers and you can make the trade for him or sign him next year, don't waste your time signing Adams too, because that's just pissing away money.
Well, it ought to let the Packers know, like, hey, if you had brought in at least one or two big time wide receiver free agents at some point, you really could have done some damage if you look at what Rodgers is capable of doing as opposed to some of these other quarterbacks. Because he has a certain way of throwing the football for whatever reason. Who won the weekend? Like, I'll go on and tell you, I've got the Cardinals down for this. You go out and you blow out the 49ers on the road with Colt McCoy as your quarterback and with no DeSean Hopkins. I'm good with that. Like, I love the Cardinals here.
I think my Browns won the weekend.
I think they took
a big step in the division, and I think that was important to not just win that game, but to play a divisional opponent that's been really good and go in and kick the crap out of them.
Dude, did I see correctly when I was watching that game that Burrow leads the league in interceptions?
Probably. I bet he also leads the league in passes.
Probably so. But yeah, the Browns definitely looked better. You know, we'll talk about their matchup against the Patriots this week. Nick Chubb tested positive for COVID, but he is vaccinated, so he just has to have two negative tests between now and Sunday. So
that's not as easy as it sounds to get, though.
Agreed. Agreed.
I mean, COVID's still in your system. You know, it's still a thing.
But it is not an absolute required 10-day quarantine the same way that it was with Aaron Rodgers. So there is a possibility, at least, that he'll be on the field. Let's move into the big game previews, and we've only got eight of them for this week. We've been having, you know, 9 and 10, but not a ton of massive games this week. So NFL big game pick 'em preview, whatever. Week 10 last week, I went 6-3 against the number. Chris went 3-6. I am 43-34 on the year. Chris, you are 35-42, and we will start off with Thursday night football, and that would be the Ravens heading to the Dolphins. The Dolphins are a 7.5-point underdog at home, total of 46.5. The odds, of course, brought to you by BetUS, where the game begins. You can click the link in the description to get the promo code and all that. It's 125% deposit bonus. Chris, the Ravens are 5-0 against the spread, their last five at Miami. Miami has given up more quarterback pressures than any other NFL team by a long shot. I'm talking, it is ridiculous when you look at how bad that offensive line has been for Miami. Now, you go and look at what the Ravens have been able to do on the defensive line. They're great against the run, but they hadn't been able to get quarterback hurries. I don't know that it matters here, because I think they're still going to be able to get some hurries. I trust the Ravens. I think they are going to smoke the Dolphins on Thursday night. I love the Ravens plus minus 7.5.
Yeah, I don't like the hook, but I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to make you take the Dolphins. This Dolphins team is bad. They're just bad. Their only wins are against bad teams, and they're not a good team at any really level of the game. I don't know what happened. They used to be really good. They're not anymore.
I mean, it's not just the offensive line that is an issue. Obviously, the defense has not played as well when they cut bait on a lot of guys at the end of last season. But not to mention, of course, we talked in the preseason previews about the Dolphins that they had a ton of turnover luck last year, and that was just not sustainable. That a bunch of that stuff that they were able to do last year was based on the fact that they had more turnovers than almost anybody in the NFL last year, and they were able to create turnovers, or not turnovers, they were able to create points off of short fields, just a ton. And if we talk about regression to the means, that along with you lost a ton of experienced guys, and you kind of went with a little bit of a youth movement, Kyle Van Noy was really good for them last year, and they just cut bait on him for almost no reason. Like, nobody even really knew why they did it. You could tell that they are missing some of those guys on defense. And when the offense isn't really helping because the offensive line is so dreadful, it all starts to spiral. And that is certainly what's happened here. So I'm with you. We're both all in on the Ravens. Next game on the board here, we have got a 1 p.m. Eastern time game, Saints at the Titans, heading to Nashville. And the Titans look like a damn Super Bowl contender right now. Total is 44.5. The Titans are favored by 3 points. They last played in 2019. Of course, Drew Brees was still with the Saints at that point. The Saints won 38-28, and they covered, of course. Titans' defensive line has been spectacular. Trevor Siemian could get nothing going against the Falcons until late in the game. The Falcons were up 24-6 on them and with like 10 minutes left in the game. And the Saints came back and took the lead with a little over a minute left. Now, they gave up the game-winning field goal at the end, but 3 points just doesn't feel like enough. This Titans team against what is left of this Saints offense, you know, Michael Thomas out for the year. Now they're saying, I don't trust the Saints enough here. So I'm going to roll Titans again. I'm not getting in front of that steamroller.
Yeah, I kind of hate keep riding this team because I think at some point in time it's going to fall off. But the Saints team is difficult to figure out, and the Titans have beaten really, really good teams. So if they can beat the good teams, they got to be able to beat the bad teams, right?
Yeah, and are the Saints a bad team? I mean, do we consider them that without Jameis Winston?
Well, without Jameis Winston, they're not great. So
yeah, you lose at home to the Falcons, you ain't a real good football team. I will say that. Of course, that is coming off of a win with Trevor Siemian playing most of the game, a win over the Bucks. So, you know, now of course part of that was due to turnovers, which is totally not sustainable. But if you start getting Ryan Tannehill to throw you the football, who knows what can happen in this game? But yeah, I will steal it from you. And you know, the whole ride her till she bucks you thing. The Titans have been covering at a just crazy rate, and I think I'm going to ride with them here. And you are as well, right?
Yeah.
All right. Next game up, another 1 p.m. Eastern time game. We have got the Falcons, who just got a win over New Orleans, heading to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. Cowboys are a 10-point favorite, total of 53. Cowboys are 7-1 against the spread in their last 8 games. Of course, they lost last week and looked just hapless against the Denver Broncos. The Falcons, 4-1 against the spread in their last 5 games against the Cowboys. And again, we just talked about the Falcons in against the Saints and went up 24-6 and gave up a ton of points in the fourth quarter there. Gave up 22 points in the fourth quarter. If the Falcons or if the Saints had been able to get either of the 2-point conversions, they may not win that ball game, and I have to think that this is a bounce back spot for the Cowboys because I don't think the Falcons defense is very good. So I'm going to trust the Cowboys to get up off the mat and make something happen this week, especially at home, because they were absolutely embarrassed last week. And if you look at just overall like DVOA numbers, all that good stuff, there is absolutely no reason why the Cowboys shouldn't handle this very easily. Atlanta is number 31 in total DVOA. Dallas is number 5. So I'm going to trust Dallas to get this thing done against a very weak Falcons defense. Give me the Cowboys minus 10.
Man, we're seeing everything alike right now. I 100% think the teams that fell on their face that I think are really good from last week are 100% going to bounce back this week. And I think they're going to do it with some authority. I think the Cowboys are going to score a lot. Like, I would definitely take the under on the amount of punts, no matter what that number is.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Totally see that. So we're both rolling Cowboys minus 10. We have seen all three games the same.
Big number, man. I don't like laying it, but
hey,
I got to.
Yeah, you got to at this point because I can't trust the Falcons in this spot against that offense. 1 p.m. Eastern time game, we have got the Cleveland Browns headed to the New England Patriots. Patriots are a one-point favorite, total of 45. Browns 5-1 against the spread in their last six games on the road. The Patriots are 3-0 straight up and against the spread in the last three games overall. It looks like they've kind of turned a corner, but they are also not beating great teams, right? Like the Browns, I think, may be the best of the bunch that they've played in their last three games, and that includes the Chargers. Browns 2-3 against the spread and straight up in their last five games. We don't know what Nick Chubb's status is going to be for Sunday. So my number on this initially was that the Browns should be favored in this spot, and they're actually an underdog. So you would think I would roll with the Browns, but when I look at the way that the Patriots have been playing, I think the way that Baker plays right into Bill Belichick's hands, I trust the Patriots to get this done. I think the Patriots are going to win this game by more than just 1 point. So give me the Pats minus one here.
Oh, I don't want to pick this game at all. And it's not just that I like both of these teams, and so I don't want to, you know, have to choose. I don't think there's an edge here.
No,
I think it exists.
It's I'm with you 100% here, 100%.
If you maybe choose right now, I think the better team is the Browns. The Patriots are at home. If this was in Cleveland, I'd 100% take the Browns, as long as you know the number doesn't get too crazy, but. I just think that the Browns are the better football team.
If this will help you out, the Patriots are 1-4 straight up at home this season. The Patriots are 4-0 on the road.
Yeah.
So that plays into your Browns pick for sure. 4:05 p.m. Eastern time, we have got the Minnesota Vikings headed to Los Angeles to take on the Chargers. Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite, total of 52 here. Vikings 4-1 against the spread, their last five against the Chargers. Chargers, however, 9-3 against the spread overall in their last 12 games. They found a way to get it done at Philadelphia last week. Of course, that was one of your wins in your Super Contest picks. I look at these two teams, and Minnesota is better than their 3-5 record. Like, they just are. Minnesota total DVOA is number 11, and the Chargers is number 16. The offenses and defense is very similar. Minnesota's offense is better than the Chargers' defense. I'm going to roll with that. Minnesota's special teams, by the way, sizable advantage as far as special teams DVOA. I'm going to take the Vikings to get the win on the road. I'm going to take them outright. But you know, give me the 2.5 here because I like Minnesota. Like they're not a great team. They find ways to lose ball games that are really, really close. But in a close game here, I tend to like them more than I like the Chargers.
I can't bet on the Vikings. I just can't. I got to take the Chargers. This team gives away games. Going out of business.
And if you've got
they don't know how to.
You got a less than a field goal spread. You should be able to win it at home, right?
They don't know how to close.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked at this game. This was very similar to the Patriots and the Browns for me, where there's not like a huge edge because I think Minnesota's the better team. However, I've seen them give away too many ball games, but I'm going to ride the Vikings again this week. Now, last week I had a bigger head start with 5.5, but yeah, 2.5 is not a ton. I could totally understand you taking the Chargers. So
yeah, picking the same games over again because I can't do it.
No, it totally makes sense. Next game up, we got a 4:25 p.m. Eastern time game between the Seahawks and the Packers. And this is a battle of possibly backup quarterbacks. The earliest that Aaron Rodgers can rejoin his team would be Saturday. And that is, of course, with negative tests and no symptoms and blah, 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 right? He has not practiced all week with the team. So Jordan Love has gotten all of the first team reps. My guess is that the Packers are going to roll with Jordan Love. And in that situation, but by the way, both teams, because the Packers actually covered last week when that line got crazy when Rodgers went out, the Packers and the Seahawks combined 9-1 against the spread in the last 10 ball games. That's 5 for each team. So the Seahawks have been covering even with Geno Smith at quarterback, but I think that's because the lines have been inflated. I still think it's inflated here. Like, it's 3.5. The Packers are 3.5-point favorites, total of 49.5. I think my favorite play might be the under 49.5, but because we're picking sides here, I'm going to take the Seahawks to keep this thing close because I think they could win at Lambeau with as bad as Jordan Love looked last week.
So I completely agree with that. I like the Seahawks as well. I think there's a chance that Wilson comes back.
Are they saying he might play this week?
I thought I was seeing that. I know he's getting closer to coming back. Maybe he's not for this week, but I know this. It's getting closer.
So maybe we've got a coin flip between whether it's Wilson or Aaron Rodgers, or maybe both of them play. In which case, I might still take the Seahawks. So,
well, I'll tell you this. If it's Love right now, I think I would take the Seahawks no matter who they got starting their quarterback.
Yeah, and that's the way I'm looking at this. I'm looking at – I would take Geno Smith to cover 3.5 against Jordan Love any day of the week. Any day of the week. We got two more that we're going to hit before we do our Super Contest picks, so let's dive into them. Sunday Night Football, we have got – the Kansas City Chiefs headed to the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders are a 2.5-point dog at home. 51.5 is the total. Chiefs 8-2 straight up in their last 10 against the Raiders. However, they are 0-2 against the spread last season against the Raiders. Kansas City 2-8 against the spread their last 10 ball games. My question here has to do with the Raiders, and it's how much is all of this off-field distraction stuff going to affect them this week, because they had even more of it come out with what's the kid's name, Arnett, the cornerback, that they waived him. Of course, there's still all the rug stuff going on. They didn't look great against the Giants. And I think the Chiefs finally got some breaks to go their way, obviously with backup quarterbacks and all kinds of stuff. I don't think the Chiefs are great, but they're only a 2.5-point favorite here. I think they can win this game by 3. I expect them to. So I'm going to take the Chiefs at -2.5 here.
I'm not. I'm going to keep betting against them because it's been a hell of a bet for the year. And I think they've only covered twice. And so I'm going to keep betting against them.
It does make
sense.
The
Raiders looked terrible last week. But a lot of people looked bad last week. You know who also looked terrible last week?
The Chiefs.
Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yes.
They scored 13 points against a team that could not get off the field. They had the ball for like 40 minutes in this game, and they put up 13 points.
Yeah, yeah. It may not be a smart bet on my part, but part of my thinking is, as bad as that offense looked, they are going to rebound a bit. It kind of the same thought process that I had with the Cowboys, right? Yeah, you look at the Raiders, like they're good, but they ain't great on defense, right? Well, I take that back. So their DVOA actually improved last week. They are up to number 14 in total DVOA on defense. So, I don't know. Now I'm curious. I know Kansas City has a massive advantage on special teams DVOA. They're number 1 in that metric, and Las Vegas is number 26. But as far as, like, total DVOA, you've got the number 17 Chiefs against the number 21 Raiders. I mean, it's coin flip. It's a coin flip game. We shall see. So you're riding the Raiders, and I am riding the Chiefs. We've got one more, and it is the Monday night game. So let's dive into that one. Monday night, the Rams headed to the 49ers, and the Niners are a 4-point underdog at home. The 49ers, however, are 4-1 straight up in their last 5 against the Rams. I think the Rams were embarrassed last week by the Titans. And I think that the 49ers are not a very good football team. I want them to be better, but it does not appear that they are going to come out of whatever this is that they are. You look at overall metrics, Yeah, the 49ers are number 9 in total DVOA. And that's pretty damn good. Their offense is actually number 6 in DVOA, but you're going against the Rams defense, which is number 4, and then you've got the Rams offense, which is number 2 in DVOA against San Francisco, number 17 in defensive DVOA. I thought that the defense was going to be able to snap out of what they were last year when they had all the injuries, etc. They still got some injuries this season, but they have not been good on defense. They just haven't. And while normally 49ers at home, I would think, would be a really good bet in this spot, especially over a field goal, man, I think the Rams are going to put it on them this week. Like, I think the Rams are going to be fantastic. So I'm taking Los Angeles minus 4 with Matt Stafford and that bunch bouncing back.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I've had long discussions with people that I'm close to, and I value their opinion about Kyle Shanahan might not being the guy. And you know how hard that is to hurt, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, you've been all in on him.
So here's my thought process. Here's where I'm at. Okay. I'm no longer standing on the corner screaming at them as they tell me how terrible he is. Okay. But I'm not out on him, and I'm not bashing him by any means, but I'm not stopping others from doing it. All right. I'm not partaking, but I'm not defending right now. There's a world where this 49ers thing just doesn't work, and I can't explain it. And I know that they've never had a fully healthy roster and all this stuff. Listen, they gave up 3 first-round picks for a guy who none of these rookie quarterbacks, to be honest, are playing very good right now. Okay,
agreed.
And there's a world where none of them are very good in the NFL. That happens all the time. All right, that's not a surprise to anybody. But nobody else fit 3 first-round picks.
Yeah, you were not wrong. You are not wrong. This was supposed to be the guy that was going to replace Jimmy Garoppolo, and Garoppolo hadn't been that bad this year. So why not take another guy that might be able to help you somewhere else on the field rather than waste 3 first-round picks? Like, I don't understand it. But, alas, I mean, it looks like the Rams are the better bet this week. My line on it was actually Rams minus 7, which is why I'm rolling that way. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe they can get out of this funk, but they have not been very good this year. You ready to jump into Super Contest?
Yeah, we got to roll through.
All right, let's roll through them. Super Contest for Week 10, and we have got last week I went 5-0 against the spread. I am 27-18 on the season. Chris went 2-3. He is 21-22-2 on the season. Chris, I'm going to start us off. I'm going to take the Lions plus 9 at the Steelers. Every Steelers game is close. It does not matter who they play. Typically, they win their games at home, but they are not going to win this by more than a touchdown, I do not believe, because I think the Lions have a lot of fight in them. I expect the Lions to continue fighting here. So give me the Lions plus 9 at Pittsburgh.
We're using BetUS?
Yes, BetUS Lions.
It's now 9.5, so you're good. Right. Take yourself a half point. I'll take the same thing, and my logic is a little different than your logic. My logic is the Steelers are going to win this game, but the Steelers are going to look like shit doing it because the Steelers are a really bad football team. This is the exact same team as last year. Nothing has changed since last year. Their record is going to make them look like they're really good. They're probably going to get a playoff spot because there aren't 7 teams in the AFC that deserve to make the playoffs. And they're going to get their ass kicked when they first get in because they're not a good football team.
Yeah, I tend to agree. My next one on the board, the Eagles. I'm taking the Eagles plus 3 at the Broncos. I think this Eagles team, I've talked badly about them pretty much all season. Devontae Smith has really shown up at wide receiver for them. They have threats on offense. And Jalen Hurts, you know, it's basically what he runs at Alabama or what he ran at Alabama and at Oklahoma. He doesn't have to throw the ball down the field. He just gets the ball to the playmakers and lets them go make moves in space. And I don't think the Eagles are that bad. I don't think that the Broncos are nearly as good as what they looked last week. So this is them regressing back to the means. I'm going to take the Eagles plus 3 at Denver.
All right. I will go to the Seahawks and the Packers. I'll take the 3.5 against the Packers. Once again, I kind of don't even care if Rodgers plays anymore. I think there's a world where that team's got a lot of bigger issues.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that. Game 3 for me. I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Bucs on the road, -10 against the Washington football team. Washington's defense, I kept expecting all season for them to show up and do something different, and they haven't. This is not a very good defense, and I think that Tom Brady and that bunch are going to eat them alive. Washington's defense is number 30 in total DVOA. I'm expecting a ton of points from Brady. He doesn't seem to ever cover in primetime anymore. It's always a close game with him, but we got him at a 1 p.m. Eastern time game on the road. Yeah, give me Tommy here. So I'll take the Bucs -10.
Yeah, that's a pretty good pick. I'm going to take the Panthers +10 against the Cardinals. I know that the Panthers have not looked very good, and I know the Cardinals have been killing everybody. 10 points is a lot of points, and I just think at some point in time, I don't think the Cardinals are that great of a football team. I might be wrong. At the end of the year, they might be hoisting Lombardi, and I'm looking like an idiot. I just don't think they are. So.
I can understand it. Pick 4 for me, Vikings +2.5 at the Chargers. Already talked about it. I think that the Vikings overall are the better football team. For whatever reason, the Chargers seem to play better on the road than they do at home. And I think the same thing will hold true here. The Vikings have gotten close. They're 3-5 on the season. I expect them to be able to get the W in this spot. So give me the Vikings +2.5.
I'm going to take the Titans at home against the Saints, -3. I just think it's too many points. It's not enough points. This Saints team is a weird team, a hard team to figure out. Titans team's fighting hard. They're playing hard. I'll take the Titans.
And that Titans defensive line against this Saints offensive line, that looks like a sizable mismatch there. So I can roll with it. Game number 5 for me, I'm going to take the Jaguars. Jaguars +10.5 at the Colts. Do I think that the Jags are a good football team? No. Do I think that the Colts are a good football team? Not really. They've played really well lately, but I think that the Jags are a little bit better. They are improving. I don't think they're going to get smoked in this game. I expect this divisional matchup to be relatively close. So give me the Jags +10.5 at Indianapolis.
There you go. And I will take my last one. I'll take the Cowboys -10 against the Falcons. I think one of these teams is due for a big, 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 big bounce back, and I think the other team is not good. They just got a win. I don't expect them to get many wins. I think they'll get blown out.
I can get down with it. All right, recap right quick. Lions +9.5, Eagles +3, Bucks -10, Vikings +2.5, Jags +10.5 for me. And Chris has got the Lions +9.5, Seahawks +3.5, Panthers +10, Titans -3, and Cowboys -10. Chris, is there anything else that you would like to hit before I let you go and wrap this thing up?
No, sir. I'm good, brother. Thank you.
Wonderful. Take care. We'll talk to you again for the Friday show.
See you, man.
All right. Perfect. Let's go on and knock this thing out. Head over to BetUS. They bring you the show each and every time out. BetUS.com. Use the promo code NCAAF2021. It's going to get you 125% sign-up bonus. And you can, of course, click the link that's in the description, and it will put the promo code in there for you. It's up to $2,500, and it is sportsbook exclusive. Along with that, check out the BetUS College Football Show. Check out the Sportsbook Review College Football Show. Chris hosts that one. I host the BetUS one. The links are in the description for those. And with that said, I think we are going to go ahead and get out. Oh, go to winningcureseverything.com. All of our picks and everything else will be over there. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. And hopefully, all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.